Mike Shannon was pleased as Rusty brought the two horses to the cabin and put them in the pen from which the mules had been stolen.
Whew, I was afraid we'd have to go foot.
That would have been futile, sure enough, Rusty thought, though he did not say so. The Federal Army's foot soldiers had never been able to catch up to any Indians, though they had worn out a lot of shoe leather trying.
You're going off on a fool's errand, Michael. Even if you catch up to them, what'll you do? Get yourself killed, more than likely, and David with you.
We'll come up with something, Dora.
How far do you think you can ride? What about that bad leg?
It's a long way from the heart. Saddle up, Rusty. Let's go get our guns.
In the cabin, Rusty held the flintlock rifle Mike had brought home from the war with Mexico. It was the only one the family owned. He handed it to Mike. From a corner, he took an old shotgun Mike had carried to Texas in 1836 in hope of using it on Mexican General Santa Anna, or Santa Anna, as Mike called him. A muzzle-loading horse pistol usually rested on a set of pegs beneath the rifle, but it was missing. A greasy-whiskered neighbor named Fowler Gaskin had borrowed it weeks ago. Gaskin was notorious for borrowing first one thing, then another, sometimes asking, sometimes just coming and getting. He was also notorious for not bringing anything back. If the owner wanted it, he had to go and get it, if Gaskin hadn't misplaced it somewhere or sold it to somebody. A couple of weeks ago, he had borrowed Mike Shannon's best mule, Chapultepec. He hadn't asked, but had chosen a time when the menfolk were elsewhere. It might just be that the Indians had missed the Gaskin place, Rusty thought. If so, the Shannons still had one plow mule after all. Indian raids were no longer commonplace along this section of the Colorado, though they still occurred with regularity farther west. Texas had been a state in the Union for more than 10 years now. Federal troops guarded the frontier, but most were infantry, restricted to guard and garrison duty and ill-equipped for pursuit of the Comanches' light cavalry. Several times Mike had enlisted in the state's volunteer ranging companies for limited periods. Rusty had no clear recollection of ever having seen a Comanche close up, though faint and confusing fragments of memory sometimes came to him unbidden, so elusive he could never grab hold of them. He knew Indians had carried him away from his original home, and he was aware that he had stayed with them a short while. Mostly, he remembered being bewildered and frightened, not able to understand.
Mother, we'll drag that dog off before we leave. He'll be stinking before long.
The dark circles beneath her eyes seemed heavier this morning, and her hair had never looked quite so gray.
I wish you wouldn't go. You're not as young as you think you are, Mike. How far do you think you can travel?
I rode many a mile and crossed many a river during the war.
That was 10 years ago, before a Comanche bullet ruined your leg. There are lots of things you used to do that you can't anymore.
Fearing the two were about to plunge into a full-blown argument, Rusty stepped out onto the dog run.
Company coming.
Mike hobbled out with the rifle cradled in his arms, ready for use.
Hard to believe they'd come back for more. They already took more than enough.
It's white men. Looks like Tom Blessing in the lead.
Mike squinted, uncertain. His eyesight was not as keen as it used to be. Blessing had often served as a captain when the state treasury got a few dollars ahead and the governor called ranger companies into service. Several times, Rusty had watched Mike ride away with Blessing and others in search of Indians or bandits, or to put down one of the foolish but bloody feuds that seemed always brewing in the older settlements of Texas. Rusty was aware, from stories he had heard, that Blessing had been present when he was recovered from the Comanches at Plum Creek. He had always felt that he owed his life to Tom Blessing, Mike Shannon, and Preacher Webb. He was pleased to see Preacher Webb riding just behind Blessing. Every man was armed. It was plain that they were trailing the Indians. Blessing's pale blue eyes were a major contrast to his fierce black beard, speckled with gray.
Mike, I judge by the tracks that y'all had visitors last night.
We sure enough did. Tried to clean us out of horse and mule flesh, by God. Me and Rusty was fixing to take up their trail.
Just the two of you?
Well, didn't figure on Dora going.
Mind if we join you?
Me and Rusty be tickled for the company, long as you don't get in our way.
Thank the Lord that the Indians were after stock more than scalps.
They took some scalps to the east of here, though. Killed most of a family. Stole a woman and a boy.
A boy?
Last time I saw you, Mike, that leg was still in bad shape. You sure you're ready for a long ride?
By God, I'm always ready. You never see me lag behind like some people.
Mike directed his gaze to Fowler Gaskin. sitting on Mike's mule, Chapultepec. Gaskin held a hand behind his right ear, trying to hear better. He was thin as a slab of bacon, his face ruddy with tiny red veins threaded across it, his ragged old vest spotted with tobacco juice and remnants of past meals. He took more sustenance from a jug than from a plate.
Dad, there's Chapultepec. They didn't get him.
I wish they had. He's the roughest trotting mule I ever rode. Looks like y'all could keep a better one around for your neighbors to borrow.
You didn't ask. You just came and took him. We could have told you he's a plow mule, not a riding mule.
It's apt to be a hard ride, Fowler. At your age, I'm sure you'd rather be at home watching over your family. Why don't you turn back?
Gaskin did not watch over his family very well under the best of circumstances. He and his wife and daughter Florrie barely tolerated one another, and Gaskin didn't even like his two sons much. Neither did Rusty. F and Luke Gaskin used to lie in ambush, waiting to chunk rocks at him when he came into range. Usually they scampered as soon as Rusty began hurling the same rocks back at them. His aim was better. The Gaskin boys were too lazy to practice, but Rusty was not. Lately, the brothers had outgrown rock throwing, but still baited him and threw insults. The whole family was a lean and hungry lot, looking to reap where others had sown. Gaskin seemed torn. Rusty suspected he had come this far only because someone had shamed him into it. A tall, angry-looking man named Isaac York pushed his horse against the mule Gaskin rode.
Go back, Fowler, and leave the fighting to people who know how to kill Indians. You'd just be in the way.
I'll come this far. I'll go the whole hog.
Mike, I wish you wouldn't take David. He's just a boy.
Maybe you haven't looked at him close, Miss Shannon. Rusty's a man.
Rusty warmed at Blessing's acceptance. He had waited a long time for it.
We're going on, Mike. When you're ready, you can lope up and catch us.
Rusty watched the men ride away. The faces were known to him, and most of the names. They were neighbors, friends of Mike's, farmers and tradesmen from the settlement 5 miles downriver. Each had his own life and his own interests, but in times of challenge, the community pulled together. In that way, it had survived the poverty of the early years, the pressure from Indians and from Mexico. Preacher Webb dismounted.
I'll wait and ride with you all. How do you feel, Dora? Any improvement?
I know better than to lie to a preacher.
Mike, I wish you'd stay and watch over Dora. It's time you left the fighting to younger men.
I ain't any older than you are.
I've got no sick wife at home.
He set his mind to go, Preacher Webb, so let him be. I can take care of myself. Always have. I sacked up some victuals. There's coffee and some bacon and salt, and the biscuits from breakfast. And you all had best take blankets. The nights can get chilly out in the open. You be real careful, son.
The young'un will do his duty.
Duty. Duty will be the death of you someday.
She put her thin arms around her husband.
Oh, don't take any chances trying to get our stock back. We can buy more somehow. Just bring yourself back in one piece and make sure nothing happens to David. He's the only son we'll ever have.
We probably won't catch up to him anyway. Well, we'd best be moving, Preacher.
God bless this house and all who live in it.
For years, Rusty had worked the farm without anything exciting happening to him. Following the plow and the mules day after day, year after year, he had dreamed of joining a Minuteman ranging company, as Mike had so often done. He had seen himself riding boldly into action, making Mike and Mother Dora proud of the raising they had given him. Now, his backside prickled with anticipation. The three did not press their animals to catch up quickly.
We got plenty of time to catch up. We're unlikely to overtake the Indians before tomorrow or next day at the earliest.
They gradually closed the distance between them and the other volunteers without breaking into a run that would tire their horses. The hooves of the stolen animals had beaten down the grass and left a wide band of tracks that anyone could have followed. It felt natural to Rusty that he ride alongside Preacher Webb. Several times he had accompanied Webb on his preaching circuit when he had no pressing responsibilities at home. The minister had always been pleasant company and a good teacher without blatantly appearing to try. He was widely read and could talk at length on subjects totally foreign but fascinating to Rusty. Moreover, he saved his sermons for the pulpit. His best preaching was done by example, living the kind of life he urged upon others. If the man had any vices beyond a little affinity for horse races and a bachelor's way of staring wistfully at good-looking ladies, Rusty had not seen it. He had long marveled at the man's stamina. The minister would sometimes ride until fatigue dulled his eyes and he could barely stay in the saddle. His left arm was crooked, having healed that way after being broken by an Indian club at Plum Creek. The arm was always subject to the miseries when the weather changed, but the minister never let it handicap him if work needed to be done. He and Mike and Rusty caught up when Blessing's men stopped for a noon rest. The trail was still plain. Rusty thought, though he did not say so, that it was a mistake to pause while the Indians rode on, but the pursuers' mounts could only be pushed so far and so fast. The Indians could switch to fresh horses from among those they had taken. Blessing's men had to make do with what they had. If a mount gave out or went lame, its rider was out of the chase. Tom Blessing walked out to meet the three incoming horsemen.
Better get down and let your mounts blow a little. Your daddy's been sworn in so many times there don't seem any point to it. But I'll swear you in if you want me to. You'll not likely see a dime of state money, but at least you can put in a claim. For whatever that's worth.
I don't worry about pay. But I'd take it kindly if you made me a ranger, even for a few days. So would Daddy Mike, I think.
From Mike's stories, Rusty knew the rangers did not stand on ceremony. They had no official uniform, no official badge, not even an official title. They were most often called simply rangers or ranging companies, minutemen, and sometimes spies. Their rules were mostly made up as they went along, based on common sense and the realities of the moment. The main requirement was that they do the job or bust themselves trying. Sometimes they did indeed bust themselves, but more often they did whatever they thought it took to get the job done. If they happened to maim or kill a few more people than was really necessary, well, that was just too damn bad. It was ranger logic that such casualties resulted from folks being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And they were probably guilty of something anyway. Blessing hadn't called a halt until dusk faded into darkness. They had stopped where the steep banks of a near-dry creek bed would hide their meager campfire from view should the Indians send scouts to survey their back trail. The men needed rest, especially Mike and Preacher Webb. Mike rubbed his bad leg and winced with pain when he thought nobody was looking. The minister seemed wrung out like a freshly washed shirt. He gripped his crooked arm as if the miseries had set in deep.
Oscar Petrie had the foresight to bring a bottle of whiskey, if that would help you, Mike.
Oscar Petrie is the smartest man I know.
How about you, Preacher?
After I've made whiskey the subject of 100 sermons?
It has medicinal properties.
Mother Dora packed me some coffee. I'll boil you some, Preacher. I never heard you sermonize against that.
And you never will. When the Christians drove the Turks from the gates of Vienna, the Turks left their stores of coffee behind. I feel sure that this was the Lord's notion of a proper gift to his faithful.
Isaac York kept pacing back and forth atop the creek bank, staring toward the north.
Isaac, you'd better get some rest while you can.
I doubt that woman and boy they stole are getting any rest.
You can't do them any good if you're too worn out to keep up.
Moon's rising. Plain as the tracks are, we ought to be able to follow them pretty soon.
We'll never catch up riding dead horses. Come on down.
Blessing held up a steaming cup of coffee. York descended from the bank. A black man who always accompanied York took the coffee when Blessing offered it, as if it were his place and his only to serve York.
All right, go get you some sleep, Shaney.
Yes, sir.
York squatted near the fire, a towering man with a slight hunch to his broad shoulders. Rusty studied the brooding face, made blood red and fearsome by the flickering reflection of the coals. He knew the man mostly by reputation. He was said to be a ferocious fighter in any scrap with Indians. Mike had fought side by side with him in the Mexican War. He said York seemed to take that conflict as a personal crusade and looked at killing as many enemies as possible as a personal obligation. Back home, York was known as a heavy drinker and dram shop brawler, always looking for a new war to fight. Though Mike Shannon was a good scrapper himself, he gave York room, except when duty called them together. Rusty was intrigued by the man's intensity.
Preacher Webb,
What do you think of Isaac York?
He's been to the edge of the pit and looked down into the fires of hell. He's a good man to have at your side in a fight, but some dark day the fire will draw him in. You'd not want to be at his side then.
The sun was 3 hours high when they came upon the place where the Comanches had spent the night. Buzzards had already found what remained of a horse they had slaughtered and roasted. They led the pursuers to something else as well. Rusty took one look at the naked, bloody corpse of the woman and quickly turned away. The exhilarating sense of adventure vanished. He almost lost his quick breakfast of coffee and cold biscuits. He leaned far out of the saddle in case it all came up. Fowler Gaskin stared at the body with bold curiosity, as if he'd never seen a woman naked before.
Have you no decency in you, Fowler?
Webb untied the blanket from behind the cantle of his saddle. He covered the woman with it. The other men bared and bowed their heads. Rusty sensed a quiet fury rising among the group, though no one spoke. York faced Blessing.
They probably done this tour while we was taking our rest last night.
We couldn't have gotten here in time to stop it if we had been riding straight through. Look around. The boy might be here somewhere, too.
There's no trace.
Damn them. The only way to stop them is to kill them all. Every last redskin heathen for 1,000 miles.
You know we can't.
Why not? Who'd stop us?
The United States Army. They'd stop us at the reserve.
Rusty was aware that a reservation had been set up on the Brazos River in north central Texas for those Indians who could come to council and formally agree to peace. He knew from what he had heard around the settlement that even some southern Comanche bands were there. Other Comanches remained unfettered, ranging at will across their accustomed hunting grounds and beyond, occasionally raiding southward all the way into Mexico. The settlers were distrustful, even hostile, to the concept of reserve Indians. It was common belief that raiding parties ventured out from the reservation, then fled back to the army's protection once they'd committed their depredations. This was accepted as fact, though some of the warriors now on the reserve had sided with the whites as scouts and fighting allies in two recent major campaigns against hostile Comanches. Comanches preyed upon other Indians as well as upon the white settlements. They saw everyone around them as either friend or enemy. They had few friends.
The Federals? They don't do a damn thing to protect white people, but they chewed us all to save their Indian pets.
Preacher, we never thought to bring a shovel, but there's plenty of rocks here. Reckon you and Rusty can cover her decent and then try to catch up to us. We'll move on as fast as we can without killing the horses.
We'll do our best by her.
Fowler, why don't you stay and help?
You say so, Tom. But you know I'm ready and raring to go on.
We ought to kill them all and send them back to hell where they came from.
Preacher Webb, was this lady maybe some kin of York's?
I doubt he even knew her, Rusty. But out here we're so few that in one sense we're all kin.
I just thought from the way he acted.
A few years ago, down on the Brazos, he and Shanty went to help a neighbor raise a cabin. When they got back, he found his own cabin burned and his wife dead. The Comanches did to her what they did to this poor woman, and killed his two little girls besides. Such a thing has driven stronger men than Isaac York out of their minds.
Tom Blessing don't know what he may be getting into. They're likely running into an ambush.
He knows what he's doing. He always does.
Well, his sorry mule's about to give out.
And the best thing for you to do is to go on home. You wouldn't be of much use on a worn-out mule.
You tell Tom Blessing how bad I hate to have to drop out.
He'll understand. We all do.
Rusty stared regretfully at the wrapped body.
It don't seem right. No fitting grave, not even a marker. No kinfolks to say goodbye.
What's here is just the clay, not the soul. The Lord's taking care of her now.
Where was he last night when she really needed taking care of? He could have struck them butchers down.
It's not given to us to know his reasons. He tests the strength of our faith.
Well, I'm not real sure about mine right now. I don't think he's even looking in our direction.
Lad, this is no time to yield to blasphemy.
You think he's liable to strike me down?
You're young. You have but little notion how cruel man can be to man. You'll learn, though, and you'll need a strong faith to get you through it.
I'd have a stronger faith if I could see 12 Comanches laying here dead.
You might not like it once you saw it. Be careful what you pray for, lest it be given unto you.
Buffalo Caller had stripped down to breech-clout and moccasins and a few streaks of paint, allowing the horses and mules to be driven past him in a generally northward direction. He held tightly to the rawhide rein of the bay horse he rode and looked southward along the trail they had just made. He saw no one, but he sensed that the Texans were back there, somewhere. He had seen them in a dream last night. He could feel them in his bones. A blind man could follow these tracks, and the Texans were hardly blind. Ordinarily, this would trouble him. On most horse raids, he took every precaution to make the trail difficult or impossible to follow. But this time was different. This time, he had a purpose. A young brave drew up beside him and studied the tracks. "If we divide the horses, it will be much harder for the Texans to follow." Buffalo Caller felt a prickling of impatience. He was the leader of this raid. The young man's fighting ability was as yet unproven. It was not for them to question his judgment. But he put down the flare of resentment, for this was Black Horse, son of an old friend who had died at Texan hands long ago, after the big raid on Linville. Buffalo Caller avoided ever saying Antelope's name, though it crossed his mind from time to time. Buffalo Caller thought occasionally of the boy with red hair, wondering if he yet lived. Whippoorwill had said he was alive when the Texans took him from her, but only because a Texan bullet had struck down Antelope as he tried to kill the youngster. He had often thought upon Antelope's warning that the boy's red hair was bad medicine and could bring misfortune upon them all. True, the big fight had been a disaster for the Comanches. Buffalo Caller had almost died of a bullet wound, and later had had to make his way afoot all the way from the battlefield to the encampment on the plains. Many a long and sleepless night, he had pondered Antelope's warning and wondered if it might have been correct. Blinking against the bite of dust, he looked toward the herd of horses and mules. He could not see the white boy they had taken. He had feared all along that one of the young warriors might take it in his head to kill the youngster, as Antelope had tried to kill the other one long ago. That would be contrary to Buffalo Caller's order, but the young men were not bound to obey if they chose otherwise. A war leader could not compel. He could only use his powers of persuasion and hope they were strong enough. He had given his approval for the young men to violate and then butcher the white woman in hope that spilling her blood would cool the fire in their own. She had been a burden anyway, weeping all the time. He put the bay into a lope to catch up and pass the herd. He noted with satisfaction that the captive boy appeared sound enough, riding in front of a young warrior who had suggested that he might take the lad as his brother. He rode beyond the herd to where a wolf that limps was scouting out in front.
"We have entered the reserve. We must be watchful and not fall into the hands of the soldiers."
It was well known that horseback troops of the White Father in Washington patrolled the perimeter of the Indian reserve, as much to protect their wards inside from hostile whites as to prevent those wards from slipping away and committing depredations. Buffalo Caller had only contempt for Indians who gave up their freedom and allowed themselves to be penned like cattle, accepting whatever paltry gifts the White Father deigned to give them. A real man would choose to range free, hunting buffalo, raiding his enemies, living from the land, or he would die fighting, as wild horses sometimes died rather than submit to the rope. Moreover, Buffalo Caller was resentful because some of the reserve Indians had aided soldiers and rangers against those Comanches who still chose to remain outside, living in the old ways. Many a weeping widow had mutilated herself in mourning for husbands who died at the hands of these pet dogs from the reservation. Most Texans could not distinguish between tribes. Reserve Indians who rode with them against the Comanches had to tie white cloths to their arms so the whites would not kill them by mistake. Buffalo Caller knew that most settlers believed the reserve Indians were taking advantage of their protected status to commit theft and murder in the settlements, then flee back to safety under the soldiers' guardianship. The Texans were chafing at a chance for vengeance. So was Buffalo Caller. He thought it a delicious irony that the whites themselves might give him that revenge.
"Buffalo Caller, would it not be much safer to go around the reserve? The soldiers do not range far. They would never see us."
"If we are careful, they will not see us anyway. But the Texans will follow the tracks. They will believe those who live on the reservation have made this raid. Sooner or later, they will fall upon them with gun and knife. The ones who help them against us
will pay for what they did. Are the whites so easily fooled?
They are bad-hearted people who do not know Comanche from Waco or Caddo or Kiowa. They will kill our enemies for us and believe they have done a great thing.
The Texans are coming! They follow the trail just as you wanted.
Onto the reserve?
Yes, but the horse soldiers will stop them soon. They also are coming. Buffalo Caller had not counted on the soldiers. But after a moment's consideration, he decided benevolent spirits were indeed riding with him today. It might be even better than he had planned if the soldiers and the Texans confronted one another. Perhaps some would be killed. Even if not, this would only anger the Texans more against the traitorous people who lived on the reserve. One day soon, the Texans would rise in fury, and the Comanches would have vengeance upon those who had brought the Rangers and the soldiers against them. Buffalo Caller signaled for them to stop the herd.
Now, the trap is sprung. It is time we divide and disappear like smoke.
The horses and mules were split into small groups whose tracks would be difficult to follow. If the Texans managed to get past the soldiers and penetrate this far, they would be confounded by loss of the trail. It would seem obvious to them that the reserve Indians were the authors of their trouble. You're clever, Buffalo Caller.
I have studied the trickster. Coyote is a good teacher.
Blessing appeared torn, believing even as he wished he didn't.
See there, Tom? What I've been telling you? These tracks have led us straight onto the reserve.
Don't you think I can see for myself?
You didn't want to, but there's the evidence right before your eyes. How much longer we gotta put up with this before we do what we ought to have done back before they ever moved them red heathens in here?
The agents have said all along that they're keeping the reserve Indians under control. I can't say I trusted all of them, but I trusted Robert Neighbors, the chief agent. He was approved by both the federal government and the governor of Texas.
That dead woman back yonder tells you he lied. She tells you they all lied. We just well have a rattlesnake den in our backyard as to have this reserve here.
I don't know what we can do about it.
Well, we're fixing to get a chance. Yonder come the yellow-legged soldiers.
Rusty turned to look in the direction York pointed. A small federal patrol of about 7 men moved rapidly up from their right flank. The officer in the lead waved his hand as a signal for the Texans to halt.
There's twice as many of us as there is of them. We ain't stopping for them, are we?
Let's see what they say about these horse tracks.
Rusty, if any trouble starts, you get out of the way. Your mother would never forgive me if I let you get shot, especially by a United States soldier.
If you don't run, I don't run.
The officer glanced first at York, then at Blessing, trying to decide which was the leader.
Do you have business with us, sir? If not, we have business of our own.
Are you aware that you're trespassing? You crossed over the reserve boundary some miles back.
With good reason. Some of your wards butchered a woman back yonder, and they kidnapped a boy. Besides that, they've stolen a big bunch of horses and mules. We intend to get them back.
Well, none of our Indians are out. We've been making certain of that.
Look at the tracks. They speak for themselves.
If any of our Indians have a captive, we'll see that he's freed. If livestock has been stolen from you, it is the responsibility of federal troops to recover them. Now, gentlemen, you will turn around and leave.
We've come to free that boy and get our property back, officer. And we intend to make some of your red pets pay. If you think you can stop us, you'd best count your soldiers and then count us.
This is a federal reserve. You have no right to be here.
It may be a federal reserve, but it's in Texas, and we are officers of the state of Texas, duly sworn. If your reserve Indians are not guilty, who is?
That must be determined by us, not by you.
You'll have to shoot us to stop us. It'll look bad in Washington, federal troops shooting citizens who only want to get back what's rightfully theirs.
The officer did not answer. Rusty could see doubt in his eyes. Blessing took silence as a positive sign.
All right, boys. Let's go ahead.
He turned his back on the officer and touched his heels to his horse. Rusty's mouth went dry as he saw the soldiers draw rifles. Blessing saw, but if he had misgivings, he didn't betray them. He kept riding, his back straight and stiff.
Hold off, men!
The officer pulled up abreast of Blessing.
You're all under arrest, you know.
The hell you say?
Rusty knew both Blessing and the officer had been bluffing. Blessing had made his bluff stick, at least for the moment. He could see how ludicrous the situation was. 7 troopers trying to arrest a group of armed and determined Texans more than double their number. But he could not laugh. Neither could Mike or Preacher Webb.
stay close to me, young'un. Right now, it wouldn't take but one fool on either side to spark a small war.
What'll we do?
One thing we won't do is fire on Federal soldiers. I fought beside them in Mexico. I won't fight against them now.
Wise words. Well put.
The passing of Miles gradually drained away the tension. Rusty decided that neither Texans nor soldiers wanted to fight, except perhaps Isaac York. The officer calmed enough to begin a conversation with Tom Blessing, who explained to him the settlers' fears and frustrations.
I assure you, we're not uncaring. We're doing our best to keep the reservation Indians contained. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to protect them against harm from outside.
You've already shown that you can't protect us. All we're after now is justice, and to get back that boy and our stock. We'd rather have you with us than against us, but we'll do what we have to no matter which way you go. They've split off into several bunches. We can't follow them all.
Ain't no way to tell what bunch took the boy.
It won't matter. Whichever trail we follow, it will soon disappear. I'm surprised they let us track them this far.
They did it because they want you to follow. It's a Comanche trick to make you believe our reservation Indians were responsible.
They're ignorant savages. They ain't smart enough to figure out a scheme like that.
You haven't seen them from my vantage point. Just because they can't read books does not mean they lack intelligence. They're as smart as any of us.
You saying it don't make it so. Ain't no two of them got the brains of a white man.
That trail seems the largest. We'll follow it and see where it takes us.
The trail didn't take them far. It led to a stream that the officer said was a tributary to the Clear Fork of the Brazos. There it vanished. Tracks were visible to the edge of the water, but none appeared on the other side. Blessing divided the detail, sending half upstream and half down. The soldiers also split, half following one group of Texans, half the other. The officer remained with Blessing. The search was futile. The point of exit could not be found.
Crafty bastards! Let's go back and follow one of the other trails.
Wouldn't be of no use. It'd end up just like this one. When they want to, Indians can disappear like dust after a whirlwind.
We can't just up and quit. Let's search every village on the reservation until we find them.
We're out of grub, and we've just about rode our horses down. Besides, do you think seven soldiers are all there is? The lieutenant can go and fetch however many he needs to stop us, and he will.
You can count on it.
I'll go by myself if I have to. Just me and Shanty.
Shanty pulled in beside him as if to give weight to the threat.
I'd have you in irons before the sun is down.
That won't be necessary. We're going home. Unless you've still got a foolish notion that we're under arrest.
Well, I bow to reality. But I warn you once more. This reserve is protected ground. Trespass again and you'll face the full might of the United States Army.
Damn little might you've ever shown against hostile Indians.
We'll search the reserve for the boy and for your stock. But I believe they're beyond the reserve now, bound for Comanche country.
Believe what you want to, but you'd better find that boy. Otherwise, we'll be back, and you and your army can go to hell.
I'll get reinforcements and some Indian trackers. We'll follow up on the trails.
Ain't nothing will come of it. Them soldiers couldn't find an elephant in a hog pen.
What'll they do to him?
Mike Shannon stared to the north, where the Indians had probably gone.
They'll make a Comanche out of them, or they'll kill them.
That's what they'd have done to me, isn't it? But you and Preacher Webb got in their way.
I'm afraid there ain't nobody gonna get in their way this time.
The volunteers had ridden north like a military unit, heads high, driven by a stern determination. Retreating southward now, they straggled without order, shoulders hunched in an attitude of failure. The mood was contagious. Rusty felt an emptiness that went beyond hunger. He had eaten nothing since yesterday noon.
We didn't accomplish a thing.
It ends up this way more often than not. Many a time I've ridden 100 miles after Indians and never seen a feather. But we've got to try, or we'd just as well pack up our wagon and go back to wherever we came from.
There's no shame in losing, provided you made an honest effort. There's shame only when you give up before you start.
Yonder's a pair of teepees!
They stood 300 yards away, within easy water-carrying distance of the stream.
Probably just a family or two out hunting for meat. The ones we're after wouldn't camp where they're so easily found.
Still, they're Indians, ain't they? Yeah!
Behind him, the black man Shanty tried vainly to catch up.
York! Come back!
Better go after him. Ain't no telling what he's crazy enough to do.
Rusty saw two women scraping flesh from the hide of a deer. 3 children played nearby until they heard the horses and saw the oncoming riders. They fled into scrub timber alongside the stream. An elderly man stooped to come out through the open flap of a teepee. He motioned for the women to run, then pushed himself to stand as tall as his age would allow and waited for the horsemen. One of the women turned. She knelt at the man's side, then pushed to her feet and rushed at York.
God damn you, Isaac York! Put up that pistol!
I ain't through yet. There's still more of them.
Mike Shannon drew the old pistol he had brought home from the Mexican War.
Put it away, or by God, I'll shoot you.
They're getting away. I saw a boy amongst them youngins.
I saw him too. He was an Indian boy. Put up the gun, Isaac! You killed that man!
Now he's one good Comanche. He'll never kill another white woman or steal a white boy.
These are not Comanches. Take another look.
Makes no difference. They're Indians. One or another, they're all alike. I'm going after them.
To Rusty's surprise, Mike Shannon spurred up beside York and pulled him from his horse.
Damn you, Shannon!
That's enough. Both of you, back away.
No more, Dad. It's over with.
Preacher Webb was between the dead man and woman.
Lord God, forgive us all.
Isaac, there's no telling how much trouble you may have got us into. Bad enough killing the old man, but a woman too?
They killed a white woman. I hope this one dies. She won't be birthing no more Indians to grow up and kill white folks.
If the troops heard the shots, they'll be coming to see what happened. Better put the reservation behind us as quick as we can.
He waved his hand and set off southward in the lead.
Youngin, we did accomplish something after all. We killed a defenseless old man and a woman. Ain't that something for a ranger to be proud of?
Preacher Webb had ridden up to the cabin one morning, his grim expression indicating he carried a message of importance. But he delayed its delivery until he had inquired about Mother Dora's health.
I wish we had a sure enough doctor to see after her. There's much I can do that I haven't already done.
You've done your best, Preacher. The rest is up to the Almighty.
These are dark days. I suppose you've heard the talk that Texas may pull out of the Union?
I have, and it's damn foolishness.
A lot of people are dead serious about it, and there's been more trouble up on the reserve. A bunch of white men rode in there and started a fight. When it was over, they were dead on both sides. So the army has been ordered to move all tribes off of the reserve, take them north of the Red River into Indian territory.
Even the ones that helped us fight the Comanches?
That's what we're told. I'm afraid most Texans don't put much faith in Indian loyalties.
Damn poor piece of business. Whatever became of gratitude?
Tom wants to take some of us up there and help see the move stays peaceful.
Then he'd best not take Isaac York.
Isaac's not going. And neither are you, Mike. You best stay here and watch over Dora.
Rusty, you'll have to serve for both of us, young'un. It won't be a happy sight to watch. Gather up what stuff you need. I'll go saddle my black horse for you.
Hurry back as soon as you can.
I'll be back soon. Maybe a week. It won't be forever.
Not for you, but maybe for me.
I'll be back before you know I'm gone.
Tom Blessing is a good man, so listen to what he says, Rusty. But don't put all your faith in other people, because sometimes they can be wrong. Do your own thinking. In the long run, every man has got to answer to himself and for himself. Keep an eye on him, won't you, Preacher?
Don't you worry about Rusty. You take care of Dora.
Rusty and Webb cut across the river and put their horses into a trot. They intercepted Blessing and 6 others after a couple of hours. Webb explained about Mike's remaining behind.
I always felt that everything would turn out all right when I could see Mike Shannon at my side. You got a big pair of boots to fill, Rusty.
He'll fill them. He's still getting his growth.
Rusty glanced quickly over the men and was pleased to see that Isaac York was not among them. He had lain awake many nights, his mind's eye seeing York shoot the old man and the Indian woman over and over again. The man had a streak of madness in him. Given provocation, there was no telling what he might do. It took the Rangers 2 days to reach the boundary of the reserve. There they had met a couple of similar volunteer companies gathered to keep the peace. Looking at their determined faces, Rusty suspected that a few might welcome any excuse to break the peace instead, to kill a few more Indians before they were moved out of the state, and, in theory at least, out of reach. Besides the Rangers, a number of well-armed civilians were present. It was apparent that they were not burdened with the weight of good intentions. Rusty had been relieved to see a large contingent of U.S. Army troops on hand to accompany the march out of Texas. Without their protection, he suspected, many of the Indians would not live to see the Red River. Major Robert Neighbors, the Indian agent, had accompanied the final group of refugees that started the long northward trek. It was plain to Rusty that the Indians were bitterly opposed to the move, forced upon them so suddenly that they had not had time to gather most of their livestock. He could imagine what would happen to the animals. As soon as the troops were out of sight, opportunists would drive off all the horses and cattle they could find. Even if the government permitted a delegation of Indians to come back for a roundup, they would find that most of their property was gone.
We'll all breathe easier with them gone.
No matter how we may want to justify it, this is a damn poor reward for the help they gave us against the Comanches.
You've got too busy a conscience, Preacher. There's times a man has to lock it away and do what needs to be done. The white man and the Indian are too different to live side by side. We tried it, and it didn't work. Somebody has to give way. There's a lot more of us than there is of them.
North of the Red River, a satisfied buffalo caller sat on his horse at the edge of a stand of timber and watched the straggling column making its way toward the new homeland the federal government had staked out. This was what he had hoped for, why he had made false trails into the reserve. He felt no pity for the distress he saw among the evacuees. They had aided the Taobos against the Comanches. They deserved whatever misfortune the dark spirits might visit upon them. Now perhaps they would understand what the Comanches had known all along, that the whites were a treacherous and grasping lot, stealing everything they saw. Given their way, they would drive the Indian to the edge of Mother Earth and push him over into the great emptiness. Up to now, the reserve tribes had regarded the Comanches as their enemy. Perhaps this would show them who their true enemy was.
Colorado River, early 1861.
Rusty watched Mike Shannon prepare his horse.
Don't you think I ought to go with you?
Ain't no need. I'm just going to the settlement to have a drink or two and visit what friends I've still got left.
Lately, there'd been much less talk about Indians than about a proposed Texas referendum on secession from the Union. Most people along the river seemed to favor joining the new Confederacy. Mike vigorously opposed it, so longtime friends had been falling away from him.
Well, at least don't be talking politics. It'll just get you into another fight.
But why shouldn't a man say what he thinks when he knows it's right? Them boys have got no idea what they're talking about. Wanted to take Texas out of the Union. They forgot how hard we fought to get in.
It won't make a particle of difference what you or anybody else says in a little cotton gin settlement most people never heard of. It'll be decided in places like Austin and San Antonio. That's where the big votes are.
Just the same, if a man don't exercise his right to say what he thinks, pretty soon they won't let him say anything.
Even Tom Blessing has given up on the Union, and he used to be as strong for it as anybody. He says a little bunch of Yankees up north are trying to boss everybody. Says it's time to rise up and tell them to go to hell before we lose all our rights.
Don't you ever let me hear talk like that coming out of your mouth. I was born American. I fought under the United States flag. I'll not stand idle while anybody talks against it. Not you, not anybody. Not anybody, by God!
Always one to speak his mind and opinions with his fists, Mike had been increasingly argumentative since the secession talk became serious. Moreover, he had taken to drinking considerably more since they had buried Mother Dora at the edge of the oak grove west of the cabin. Nobody had ever quite decided what her ailment was. She had simply faded before their eyes, becoming grayer and thinner, losing strength, until one day Mike and Rusty had come home from the field and found her dying. Twice, Mike had asked Fowler Gaskin to return the mule he had borrowed without so much as a by your leave. Gaskin always had an excuse for keeping it a little longer. Seeing Mike's growing impatience and afraid he was on the verge of getting into a serious quarrel with Gaskin, Rusty had ridden to the neighboring farm alone, determined to fetch the mule home whether the Gaskins liked it or not. They didn't like it. Fowler Gaskin had a way of looking pathetic as a beggar on a village square when he wanted something, and he usually wanted something.
Boy, you don't know how it is to be poor folks. We can't afford to buy a good, strong mule for ourselves. We'd be obliged if y'all let us keep the use of this one just a few more days.
Where's that mule at, Gaskin?
He ain't real handy right now. Tell you what, I have one of the boys take him home the first of next week.
Where you got him?
Well, truth of the matter is, he ain't here. He's over at the Joneses.
By this time, the two Gaskin brothers were on either side of their father. Rusty could see fight in their eyes.
How come he's at the Joneses? Thought you borrowed him for your own use.
Old man Jones offered me 50 cents a day to hire him. And me and the family sure do need the money.
Well, I'll just go over to the Jones place and fetch him.
You can't do that. Old man Jones paid me for 10 days, and he ain't used him up yet.
Then I reckon you'll have to give him his money back.
But it's done spent. I don't know how I'll go about getting any more.
You might try sending your boys out to work.
You act awful high and mighty, Rusty Shannon, because you all have got a bigger farm and a lot more money.
You've got just as much land, but you're all too lazy to work it proper. As for money, I can't remember the last time we had $20 cash.
He lifted his foot toward the stirrup, but F. Gaskin grabbed the back of his coat.
You ain't going no place.
Rusty swung a not-hard fist at him. The other brother rushed in, and Rusty found himself entertaining too at the same time.
Y'all pay for that!
Rusty dodged Luke's punch, then swung his right fist. As Luke clutched his broken nose, F tried to grab Rusty. But Rusty slipped out of his grip, leaving F off balance. The Gaskin boy had a stream of blood rushing from his nose as he tripped backwards and fell into his brother. Both younger Gaskins were sitting on the ground with bruises and contusions, showing no inclination to get up. Fowler Gaskin shook his fist but dropped it quickly when Rusty took a step toward him.
I'm a crippled old man, and I wouldn't like it you hitting a crippled up old man.
We'll get you, Rusty Shannon. You just wait. We'll pay you back.
You'd better worry about how you're going to pay back old man Jones for the loss of the mule.
Riding away, Rusty rubbed his skinned knuckles with satisfaction. It had been the best day's work he had done all winter. It had been 3 days since the fight. Rusty waited supper until almost dark, hoping Mike would come home.
Those who support secession are fools. They deserve what they have coming.
A lot of them used to be friends.
And now they're enemies.
But when he finally returned, Preacher Webb was with him. Mike's face was dark with bruises, his shirt torn and bloody.
Oh, who'd he fight this time?
Isaac York.
And I ain't yet finished my discussion with him.
You know he has a crazy streak in him. He's dangerous.
I'm an American, born free and raised to stay that way. Nobody can tell me what to say or think.
A man doesn't have to go around telling everybody what he thinks. He can keep it to himself and stay out of fights that might get him killed.
Isaac York ain't see the day he could kill me. Not in a fair fight.
What promise have you got that it'd be fair?
Rusty hurried out to help. Mike waved him and Webb away.
I can get into my house by myself.
Rusty stepped aside and let him alone.
Come on in where it's warm, Preacher. Me and Rusty will fix you some supper.
He weaved his way into the kitchen side of the double cabin. Rusty remained outside.
Isaac's strong for secession. Shanty managed to get a hold of him after a few blows were struck. I took Mike out of there.
I'll bet he wasn't happy about leaving.
He wanted to finish the fight, but I was afraid I might have to bring him home dead. Isaac was mad enough to kill him.
I wish we could get him away from here for a while. Ain't there Indian trouble someplace, or maybe something stirring down on the border?
Not anything serious that I know about. I'll talk to Tom Blessing. He might cook up an excuse to get Mike away.
Well, Tom's strong for secession.
But he's too decent a man to put politics ahead of an old friendship.
Tom Blessing showed up one frosty morning as Rusty prepared breakfast. Mike, still stiff and sore from his fight with York, was having difficulty getting out of bed. Rusty had not been eager to push him, for Mike's mood was not forgiving. He had been pulled away from a fight before it was finished, and it rankled.
Come on in the house. Coffee's ready, and the rest will be in a few minutes.
Blessing paused at the kitchen door, then glanced back toward the room where Mike was.
Is he all right?
He's moving kind of slow. I guess Preacher Webb talked to you?
He did. I'd already heard about Mike's set-to with Isaac. Preacher's right. Tempers being the way they are, it'd be smart to get Mike away from here till the secession election's over with and things quiet down.
I'm afraid he doesn't realize how serious things have got. Preacher says there's been killing.
Other places? Not here. Yet.
Even Sam Houston talks against secession. Why shouldn't Mike?
Nobody's going to kill Sam Houston. He's a Texas hero. But he's old now, and not many people listen to him anymore.
Mike struggled through the door. His shirt was buttoned wrong. The left side of his face was swollen and colored a patchwork of blue and red.
You're out mighty early. Son ain't made it all the way up yet.
I've come looking for a good man. Got a little job of work for him.
I don't feel like much of a man this morning. Almost everything hurts, and what don't hurt ain't working.
You'll be all right soon as I get you on horseback and you work the kinks out of your system.
Where are we going?
Not we. Just you. I've had word from a volunteer company up close to the Red River. They got some green boys riding patrol to keep raiders from sneaking down out of the territory. They need guidance from an experienced old-timer who wouldn't turn tail and run from the first Indian he sees.
I reckon I'm your man. What about Rusty?
I figured you'd want him to stay here and take care of the farm.
Well, you sure they asked you to send him a man? Or is this just something you cooked up to get me away from here?
They need all the help they can get.
So you're fixing to move old Mike Shannon out of sight because you're afraid Isaac York is liable to hurt him.
Those boys up there really need you.
No, they don't. As for Isaac, I'd made a good start toward whooping him when I was dragged off against my will. I'm staying here to be at his service if he wants some more of the same.
We've all got your best interests at heart, Mike.
You can serve my best interests by leaving me the hell alone. Mike Shannon ain't ever run from a fight. But you come a long ways, you might as well have breakfast with us.
Somehow I don't seem to have any appetite.
Blessing shook Rusty's hand.
I'd give you some advice if I thought you'd take it.
I won't seek Isaac out if that's what worries you. But if he comes looking for me, I won't be hard to find.
Rusty followed Blessing out.
Tom, I thank you for trying.
Isaac's as stubborn as Mike is, but I'll go talk to him. And you keep an eye on your daddy. Tie him up if you have to.
Rusty walked back into the kitchen.
I think I can see Preacher Webb's fine hand in this. Yours too, like as not.
None of us wants to see you get hurt.
What hurts the worst is knowing you don't think I can take care of myself anymore. You figure I'm too old?
No, but this is a new situation. Preacher Webb says a lot of people are talking war.
I've been to war before. I'm still here.
Maybe I ought to go up to the Red River and quit worrying about you.
Maybe you ought to.
What am I going to do with you, Dad?
Nothing. Just admit that I'm a grown man. Let me do things my own way.
A young heifer, heavy with calf, had not been seen in a couple of days, then showed up with her udder swollen and her sides flatter than they had been. Rusty could tell that she'd calved. She probably had hidden the baby somewhere in the timber along the river where it would be fair game should a wolf or a coyote come prowling about. He had saddled Mike's black horse, Alamo, and followed the heifer at a distance, hoping to find the calf and bring it into the pens, where it would be safe until it was stronger and better able to survive. As he expected, the heifer led him to her new offspring. The calf lay in some heavy undergrowth where she had left it. The heifer tossed her head belligerently as Rusty led the horse toward the hiding spot.
Sook now, sook! Sook!
Dad! Dad, where are you?
He heard no answer. He trotted toward the tall stack of dead timber.
Dad, do you hear me?
Rusty.
Mike lay on his stomach near the chopping log. Rusty saw blood spreading across the back of Mike's old shirt and staining the wood chips upon which he lay. The axe was beside him where he had dropped it.
Rusty!
I'll get you to the house.
Don't move me. Don't move me.
You'll bleed to death if I don't get this blood stopped.
Won't do no good. Son of a bitch, he's a better shot than I thought.
It was Isaac York, wasn't it?
Didn't see. If he'd only made it a fair fight.
He reached out. Rusty took his hand. Rusty was disappointed at the small number of neighbors who came to pay their final respects to Mike. He had not fully realized the deep feelings many people held about secession, or how much they had resented Mike's firm stance against it. For some, his record as a ranger and the many times he had volunteered his strong arms for service to the community were not enough to erase the stain of his political leanings.
Preacher Webb, now I can see who his true friends were.
Don't blame them too much. We may be looking at a war, and war takes a hard toll on friendships. If this one comes to pass, it may even break up families. The Mike we knew couldn't deny his true convictions. You wouldn't have wanted him to.
I would if I could have saved his life.
You'd have lost respect for him, and he'd have lost respect for himself.
Nothing is worth somebody murdering him.
Rusty cast a dark look toward the sheriff, who stood at the edge of the small gathering.
Well, he don't seem too concerned over catching Isaac York and bringing him in.
There isn't any proof that Isaac did it.
Who else would have? You were there. You helped break up the fight between him and Dad. And he's not here for the funeral. He's afraid to come because he knows I know he's guilty. So do lots of folks, whether they'll admit it or not.
Several other neighbors aren't here either, but that doesn't mean they murdered Mike.
The sheriff caught enough of the conversation to arouse his interest.
Son, you got a right to be upset. But you've got no right to accuse anybody without you can show proof. You got that proof?
I didn't see him, but I know. I think you know, too.
If I'd always really known half as much as I thought I did, I'd be the smartest man in Texas. We're here to bury you, Daddy, not to set off another killing. And that's what it'll lead to if you keep making accusations. It'll come down to you or him. And I'd have to lay my bet on him.
The sheriff turned away. Despite their political feelings, a few friends like Tom Blessing from around the settlement had come to be with Rusty when word spread about Mike's death. Blessing and a couple of others had dug the grave while Rusty and Preacher Webb fashioned a coffin out of rough-cut pine torn from the side of the cow barn. There had been no extra lumber lying around. It cost too much to waste. A strong arm fell upon his shoulder. Tom Blessing stood beside him, sorrow in his light blue eyes.
Son, it'd do you good to get away from this place for a while. I've got a job for you.
What'd it become of this place?
It doesn't feel good to lie fallow a year or two and rest. Same as it helps a man to pause in his labor now and again to give thanks for the Lord's bounty. The place won't go anywhere. It'll still be here when you come back.
I've got a thing or two that needs doing first.
You're thinking of Isaac York. I can tell by the look in your eyes. Forget that. Come to my house and come prepared to travel.